This is a digital copy of an audio cassette tape. The recording was made by my mother, Doris Rennell, a child of Swedish Baptist missionaries to China, to her granddaughter, Krista Michelle Whitman. My mother talks about her World War II experiences in the towns of Gaoxing and Qingdao in Shandong Province, China, at Krista's request. Krista had a school project due. The year of the recording was possibly around 1997. This is Leonard Holmquist speaking from Chapel Hill, North Carolina, on May 21st, 2013.
Krista Michelle, this is Mumu, and I'm going to try to help you with the World War II report that you have to make. I do not have much that I can show you military-wise, but from a personal point of view, I can tell you how it was to live in China during World War II, after the Japanese took over China and became the domineering country in the old culture China. Mufa Bernie Holmquist was a Marine during World War II in the 6th Marine Division. He fought on Guam and Okinawa. You might want to look up those two countries in the library, because there were many, many that were killed at that time. His company had, or with a division, 6th Marine Division, I think had 30-some Marines in it. Outside of three guys, the whole company was wiped out, meaning killed. One full replacement company was sent in, and most of them were also killed. The little I remember is that Mufa said that they dug their foxholes, they stayed in there, they kept turns watching over for the enemies. Flares would illuminate the sky so that they could see where the Japanese were when they were trying to take Guam and Okinawa. He came to China after the war was over, and both the Marines and the Navies came to Tsingtao, Tsingtao, province of Shantung, Shantung, China. They came there for prisoner of war exchange and also to keep the country stabilized. I will tell you about the concentration camp that was set up, and many of the things that the civilians had to go through during this time. I started to write all this down for you, but my hand doesn't flow that much, and my shoulder that I broke, remember that one time, just burns too much. So I'm going to try to do this on tape recorder, which I've never done before, but it might work. When you're through with it, would you give the tape to Len and have him keep it, so that if someone else that needs a report, he can use it, or he can use it for his book that he's doing on the Rennells. I did start writing some things, and I will read that to you now. I will also give you the characters of China, which is Dong Gua. Dong meaning center, Gua meaning country. 1937, World War II began in China. At that particular time, Papa Osar, Mama Hela, and I and Roy were in Sweden. We were not there when the Japanese took over from the Chinese, when Chiang Kai-shek was there. He fled later to Taiwan, and I can Xerox a picture for you of Chiang Kai-shek that was in was the president at the time. Mumu is also on that picture. You remember that from way back when, I'm sure. But Lolly, Johnny, and their parents were in China at the time. You might want to write Johnny a note and see if he remembers the day that the Japanese came. I'm going to continue. The Japanese I can't even read my own writing. Japanese concerned China, and the Chinese people were put under the control of the Japanese soldiers. During this time, many Chinese were tortured by the Japanese, many for something that they had not done. It was very difficult with the Japanese there because they definitely believed in torture, and they also believed in gas, like they had in Japan now, where they did it to their own people. They did that to some of the villages in China during the time. The railroads, buses, and any transportation were taken over. Passes, IDs, were issued to all people. If they had been stopped and did not have their passes, they were put them in jail. If the person did not bow deep enough to an enlisted man, nevertheless an officer, he was hit to the ground with the butt of the rifle. This I saw myself done. The Chinese person would bow again, smile, and hurry away, feeling happy that he was not shot dead. The trains were overcrowded from the inland of China to the coast. Inland is also Gaohian, is where we lived, and that is in the Gaozhou Bay. If you have a map, it's Qingdao, T-S-I-N-G-T-A-O, but the spelling has been changed to Qingdao, Q-U-I-N-G-D-A-O, and it's in sort of a further inland than the beach area right by Gaozhou Bay. The trains were overcrowded from the inland to China to the coastal town of Qingdao. Freight trains were used to transport the Chinese and foreigners, meaning the Americans, the Swedish, and any other that were out there, white people. While the soldiers sat in the passenger's car sipping tea and having sushi. One woman sat on the train to the sat on the stair to the passenger car, holding her new baby in a heavy quilt. While the train was going full steam, the baby dropped out of its quilt and fell to the ground and was instantly killed. The train did not stop. During the war, there were three types of money: Japanese, Chinese, nationalist, and communist. These monies were not allowed to be used to transfer from one province area to the other. In order to bring money into the missions, the money had to be smuggled in through the Japanese guards. At the train stations, Mumu helped Papa Osa smuggle in money on the train. We had put the money in a briefcase with a large package of dry cleaning on top. Those days, dry cleaning did not come in hangers. They were folded. The Japanese soldiers told Papa Oscar to stop. He put the package carefully on the floor with the briefcase underneath. They searched all his clothes and pockets. I was the decoy and was to entertain the other guards. The Japanese people loved kids, and I was as blonde as Nikki. So they loved to touch my hair and see what I had. And so they opened the bag that I was holding, and I told them, Mishi, Mishi, which meant more or less that that was food. They were happy for the time being that they had stopped us and searched Mufa everywhere. And we went and got our ticket, and there again he put the briefcase under and the big bag on top. One soldier came over and put his bayonet, stuck it through the dry cleaning to see if he was going to bump into any money. Of course, he didn't, but the money was underneath in a small briefcase. We then proceeded through the gate, showed our tickets, and went aboard the train. We put the dry cleaning package on top where you put suitcases. Then Mufa put the briefcase, or not Mufa, Papa Osa put the briefcase in the corner where he was sitting and hung his heavy coat over it so it couldn't be seen, and then he sat in front. Again, the soldiers came up and checked the dry cleaning bag, and I just smiled, and I was like 10 years old, and pretended that everything was fine. I could see that Papa Osa's face was getting almost pale, but he just bowed and was very, very cordial to the Japanese soldiers. That one time we got through, the train started, and they didn't do any more searching. Johnny's mom did a lot of smuggling money too, because, see, the money was needed to pay the Chinese workers in our town where the schools were and the church were. So we had to get that money or they wouldn't survive. So she would put it in her bra and on her, and for some reason they didn't touch the ladies. So she was able to smuggle in quite a bit of money. In 1937, when the war broke out, when we were in Sweden, there were a lot of bombing. The roads had big holes in them. You couldn't get through with cars. You had to walk or use bicycles. The train, the rails were bombed. One train had to come to the bombed area. All the people would have to get off, and if it was a bridge that was bombed, you had to walk through the river and catch another train on the other side. Let's see now. Our city that we lived in Gyeonghyang, was an old city, and it had a Chinese wall around it, which you could walk around on top, about two and a half stories high, and perhaps 5 foot wide. So we could ride bikes on it, or we could walk on it. This was not the thing to do during when the Japanese were there, or although sometimes we did it anyway, and we went on school walks, hoping everything would be all right. But inside was the grammar school, grammar, grade, and high school, and the church, and great-great-grandma and grandpa lived there too, some other missionaries, and then Papa Osar, Mama Hela, and I. Roy, by that time, was in Sweden going to school. There was no Swedish school at the time for him to be in high school. There were two critical years when we did not receive any checks at all from Sweden, so that we had absolutely no money, so there was not even money to smuggle. At that time, the Chinese pastors and teachers would give us food to survive, and we ate a lot of sweet potatoes. We had sweet potatoes in soup, we had sweet potatoes for breakfast, we had sweet potatoes in the evenings for dinner. But as you know, I still love my roasted sweet potatoes. Very, very little meat. We all had chickens, and when they quit laying eggs, we had stewed chicken. And we did have the eggs, and we grew our own vegetables. I have one cute story about Uncle Egron that all couldn't stand goat's milk. There weren't any cows, there were only goats out in China. So he did not want to, he could not stand goat's milk. So Lolly's mom and Johnny's mom, Yarda, she gave him carnation milk for his cereal. And but then during the war, we couldn't get any canned foods out there anymore, so there was no more carnation milk. So she didn't know what to do for Uncle Egrin, Johnny's dad. So she took goat milk, colored it yellow, because carnation is yellow, and added water to it, and he never knew the difference. Walking from the train station to our compound, you walk first through quite a wide street where buses and trucks and cars can go. We had a 1928 Ford, which belonged to a great-great-grandpa, and Papa also used it too. The streets are very narrow. They are like probably 5 foot across, 6 foot across, with houses being the walls of the streets. That many, many dogs that would like to have a, put its jaw into your legs. And depending on, they were all, most of them were mud huts, some of them were made out of brick. And they always had a saying on the doors, and usually was in red that came up. It's sort of like a scroll, but pasted down on the doors. They were half doors, up and down half doors. And they were always in red and black for Chinese New Year, and they were purple if someone had died in it. So it took about 45 minutes to get to our home station. One day, a Japanese officer said that he was going to come, and we were scared, petrified, because none of us knew Japanese. So Mama Helen and I would pray like the Dickens to that this man would know English, and he came with his gun, and we didn't know for sure if Papa Osa was going to make it or not, because he was from the Japanese army, and we were running a mission. This was very, very, they did not like missionaries. But we were Swedish from a neutral nation, so they could not put us into concentration camp. He came and put his gun on the table. Mama Hella and I was in the other room praying like the Dickens that he would be okay. And he was. He spoke English, and he talked about an hour and a half with Mufa, and he even told him about the church and so on and so forth. And afterwards, he actually put the gun away and left. So no bullets flew that day. When we walked early in the morning, like 5 a.m., sometimes I would have to walk down to the train station 45 minutes away, and I would do that with a gardener, and he had a kerosene lamp, kind of like a Coleman lamp, but made out of kerosene instead, the green ones that we have. And there would be Japanese soldiers and Chinese soldiers jump out of bushes and scream, "Kulyum," which meant, "What is your name?" You weren't really out loud out at that time, but I was going down to Qingdao to have my piano lessons. And it used to scare me to death. But the gardener would say who I was and so on, and they would let us come up to the gate, the big, big Chinese gate made out of wood and iron. Then they would let us out, and took about another 20 minutes to get to the train station. We were in open fields all by ourselves. I still don't know how I dare do that. And then we took the train in. The Americans, British, and any other country that was not a neutral country, the Swiss were a neutral and the Swedes were a neutral, were put in concentration camp by the Japanese. It was about 2.5 hours by train from where we were at, and was Japanese soldiers were guarding it. This was still during World War II. There was a great big compound with many small houses where students or nurses used to live, because it was a teaching hospital. And that's where they were for several years. When the Japanese came and inspected it, when the missionaries, the American missionaries were still there, They were very angry at the mission. And in the hospital on second floor was the x-ray department, a very, very heavy x-ray unit. The Japanese soldiers took to the stairs and then pushed it down the stairs and ruined the x-ray machine so nobody can use it after that. If you remember those tiny little Chinese vases that Mumma had up in the window going from first to second floor, those belong to an American lady who gave them to us when they had to go into concentration camp, or gave them to me. Lolly has some too, when they went into concentration camp. So it was a rough time. The Swedes had to wear armband that said Sweden on it, or Swedish. We had to have all our passports or ID cards with us at all time, and our shopped records, inoculation records. The way they did the inoculations was they had one great big syringe, like a 20cc syringe, and one needle went for hundreds and hundreds of people. Infections, I am sure, started many, many places. One time, Johnny forgot his inoculation. He was on a bike, but he had put a Band-Aid over a sight. So he forgot, so he swooshed by them, showed them that he had the Band-Aid on as if he had gotten a shot, otherwise they would have given it to him. During the Japanese War, World War II, there was a lot of torture. There was, Papa Osar's best friend was a minister, and he had a lovely wife and two little kids, just as cute as you can think of, with those great big brown eyes and black hair. His brother was in the Chinese nationalist government, the one under Chiang Kai-shek. The Japanese found out about it and decided they could not get hold of Pastor Gong's brother, so instead they were going to kill Pastor Gong himself. They went to a town called Wangtai, where we also had a church, and told him that he had to give up his position as pastor, and he could not believe in God. If he did not do this, they were going to kill him. They would give him 3 days, and then they would be back. Of course, he would not give up his faith. So after 3 days, they came. He kissed his wife and hugged his kids, and they piled him with murderers onto a truck. The truck went outside of the city. There were three others plus Pastor Gong. Each one had to dig their own grave. After they dug their own grave, they had to kneel by the hole, and they started shooting. Each one was shot in one bullet, and then they automatically dropped into the grave. When they got to Pastor Gong, they shot him too. But people that watched them shoot him said that he did not fall into the grave immediately like the other three had done. Excuse me. Gently, somehow, he was put into the grave. And many that stood around said, truly, his God must be a God that cares. His God is better than ours. There was also another teacher. She was about Mrs. Jung. She was about 55 years old, 60 years old. And she was teaching in the school, the Christian school. They told her too that she had to give it up. She says, no, she would not. They took her outside of her little community or town. They took a pitchfork, buried the handle partially in the ground. Then they lifted her up above the pitchfork and pierced her body onto the pitchfork and had let her die there. She died on the pitchfork. These are sad stories, but these are true stories. These are people that we knew. Another torture that they have was they would tie a person between two poles. They tied the hands together onto a pole, the feet together onto a pole, and then they took big stones and put on their stomach. These stones were put on the stomach, and then they made them drink water, guzzle water, by the quarts, by the gallons. Then when they could not drink anymore, where the water did not have any place to go, they lifted the stones off till the water would go through. Then they put the stones back on the stomach and make them drink again. Most people did not survive. During the World War II, we were not allowed to have radios. We did not have electricity. We had electricity for 1 year, and then the electric company or the factory blew up. So we had no electricity. We had kerosene lamps, and we also had a peanut oil lamp, a little cotton wick stuck into peanut oil is what we had as light. We had a few candles, but not many. We burned most of the candles at Christmas time. This is how Momo destroyed her eyes. That's why I've had glasses since I was probably about 13 years of age. So I studied at this peanut oil lamp that gave a little bit of a light for about perhaps 6 inches around, not even that, a very, very dim light. But back to the radio, we were not allowed to have radios because then the Japanese would know that we knew that they were losing the war. But Johnny's dad, Egren, he had a small radio and it was electric, so he hooked it up to a car battery. We were not allowed to use a car either. That was against the rules too, for a law. So at night, late at night, like 1 a.m., he would get broadcast from, it was a shortwave radio, from both the States and sometimes I think he heard Sweden. Then during that day, he would use an old-fashioned telephone like the one I had in the hall. And two long rings was for us, one long ring were for his mom, Hedvig Grinnell, and then three short rings were for the other missionaries. All of us lifted up the receiver at the same time, and then he gave the news. Well, finally, the battery petered out, and we did not know. There weren't any newspapers, so we did not know who was winning the war or what stage the war was in. But one day, when I was approximately 13 or 14, we were out in the yard. I think Johnny was with, I'm not positive, but the other kids in the school and I were outside in the big yard compound that we have that had two houses on and a little bit of a man-made mountain in the center. And a plane came over. Our church and all our houses had a great big flag, about a 10-foot size flag, 10 by 5, painted on the roofs with a Swedish flag so they would know that we were a neutral nation. You would see the church, Johnny's house, then my house. And clear out of the blue sky comes an American single engine plane. And we saw this star underneath the wings. And he tipped his wing back and forth, like waving with his wings to us. We knew then that the war was over. We were so excited. We just screamed and jumped and jumped and screamed. Then we ran upstairs to my house, and there was a balcony. We ran up there, up to the balcony, And he made a circle and came back again and then tipped his wing to us again. He was so close, Krista, and so low that we saw the pilot with his flight jacket and his big goggles that the pilots used to wear. Then he put up his left hand and waved at us. That's how we knew World War II was over. It was a very, very exciting day. If you can get hold of a book called Qingdao Under Three Flags, it would, I'm sure, tell you about the different country that took Qingdao at one time. We also had the Dutch there and the Germans there. So a lot of the architecture in Qingdao is German, kind of like Solvang. And of course, beautiful Chinese architecture. Qingdao was called the Pearl of China. I do have a song, if I can find it, that Mufa wrote when he was dug into the foxhole. He wrote it only by memory in his brain until about 6 months before he died. He put it down on paper, and he also sang the song so that I could take out the tune on the piano. So then Mielin's friend Dave Talbot, Carlin Dave Talbot, he put it to music, and it was about a Marine thinking about his life and what God had done for him. So I'll try to find that for you and send it to you. I met Mufa in Qingdao after World War II, and I will send you a copy of his discharge papers so you have proof that he actually was a Marine. And I don't know how many Chinese things I have that I can send you. Probably not very many, because I don't think we got them. We had them in Gyeongyang, but I don't think we ever had them, so if I could see them. But I was a pianist in a church in Qingdao when the Marines and the Navies landed. And in 1945, in October of 1945, the Japanese surrendered. There was a big ceremony in the horse race arena in Qingdao. Papa Osa and I were at that surrender. The picture that I am sending you is General, five-star General Eisenhower, who later became president, and a Chinese officer. The Chinese officer is the father of Dr. Luan that lives in Santa Barbara. He did not know about this picture, but Mufa brought it out to him so he could see it. There is a Japanese officer handing over the samurai sword to General Eisenhower. This was the official surrender of Qingdao in 1945. It was a big day. It was an awesome day to know that the war was over. That meant that all our friends that were in concentration camp also would be coming out. They did come out later on. During the time that they were there, Papa Osa took the train twice to Weihian, which was the concentration camp city, and he took movies of the parachutes coming down, first with food to see if there was any resistance from the Japanese soldiers that were standing guard. Nobody shot at the food. He also took movies, 16-millimeter movies, of the Marines coming down and of the surrender ceremonies in Qingdao. Then he sent the film with a Marine lieutenant to have it developed, because there was no one developing anything in China at the time. The Marine stole the film and never returned it, and never said boo, never told us where he was from or where he was going. So if you should ever see a TV show with paratroopers coming down over China in a town named Weihian, those are the pictures that Papa Oscar took. Len has a Japanese sword that he could take a picture of perhaps for you, of the same type of sword that was given at the surrender in Tsingtao. Samurai sword is over his front door. You perhaps remember seeing it there. There is also a man named Ollie Erickson that lives in Minneapolis. After World War II, all the Japanese in China were transported back to Japan. This Ollie Erickson that Mumu knew, he was one of the officers on a ship called LST. It actually was used during the war for jeeps and trucks and anything like that. The front of the ship opens up. But during the POW, prisoner of war exchange, the Japanese were loaded onto these LSTs and taken to Japan. I had a couple of dates with him, by the way. And I will try and see if I can get hold of Ollie, if he's still alive, in fact, and see how the LSTs and where to they transported them, if by chance he has any pictures. I don't know. You can go to the CB base in Port Hueneme. It's free. Go on Ventura Boulevard, past Channel Island. Mom knows where it's at. You guys have been there. To the museum. You drive through the gate, tell them you're going to the museum, and all the World War II relics of different types, little miniature villages of Guam and Okinawa and so on, is in that museum. It might be give you a good background to see how the villages looked in Guam and Okinawa. Well, sweetie pie, during this time, just as the takeover became official when the Japanese invaded China, President Chiang Kai-shek somehow left China without anyone knowing. He then sort of opened up a new China on Taiwan or in Formosa. He was a nice, kind man, and his wife also was very nice. With the officer's wife on Taiwan when we were there, when your mom was 9 months old, I went to lunch with Madam Chiang Kai-shek, and I also went to a banquet dinner with President Chiang Kai-shek. I also saw his summer home. So it's kind of nice. There are a lot of people that don't think that he should have done that, and but he did. So we live with that. So I will also Xerox the picture of Chiang Kai-shek. He was then, of course, the head of the Chinese Naval Academy in Taiwan, where I taught conversational English and etiquette, how to use a fork, a knife, and spoon if you should get over to the States, how do you address the ladies, you open up the doors, and so on and so forth. Kind of was an interesting time. I taught that for 2 years. So that's about all that I can come up with, unless you can Let me know what the specific questions are that you need to ask me. Now, Tsingtao is the city, Shandong province in North China. They speak Mandarin. During the time of 8 years of occupation, it was Japanese. And there were many, 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 many more tortures, but of course, I only knew a few of them, and I know about the people that I know. But it's amazing how Japan and China has been able now to communicate, and even the United States, with a country that they were totally in war with before, just like Germany and Russia. So that's it, sweetie pie, and I'll have you call me and let me know if there's something in specific that I can tell you about. But that's how it was to live 8 years during the Japanese occupation in China with the surrender of arms or Samari sword in 1945. Love you lots. Miss you terribly out here. Tell the guys hi.